you don't know what she's talking about, then it's time for Faith Finds Out. Ooh, you don't know, but you're gonna find out.
Hi everyone, welcome to Faith Finds Out. This is your host, Faith Sines. It's episode 2, we made it, and now I'm the perfect podcaster. I'm such a pro, I know everything there is to know about everything, and I completely have mastered it. So all of that is really exciting. None of it's true, though I should say that. Still shaking in my boots over here. It's so weird recording several episodes and not knowing what the reaction is to any of them yet, because it's not out there, right? Like, this is all pre-launch work that's happening right now, and so I have no idea how you guys are going to respond and what the, like, feedback will be, and it's just, it's all so strange and terrifying. Have I said that lately, that it's terrifying? So, fun times. It's been a week, guys, I will say. I have been just obviously working really hard on the podcast, and I also decided for some reason about a week ago that I was gonna get super crafty and, like, do my very first DIY project. I've never been a DIY person, but I really wanted to hang shelves, and I saw this cool YouTube video of this girl, and she made her own. She, like, built her own shelves, and I am broke, so, you know, clearly I'm like, well, that's perfect. So I was like, I'm gonna do this. I can totally do this. Side note, I can't do it, but I did try. I went to Home Depot and I got wood. I picked out wood, which I say in air quotes because, like, how do you pick out wood? I have no idea. I just grabbed a piece of wood and I got it cut down into these two shelves, and I bought a wood stain. I picked one out that I thought was so cute, and I was right. It's adorable. And I stained the wood, and I bought these, like, pipe things to hang on the wall and kind of have the shelves sit on top of. It's hard to explain without visuals. So I made my first attempt to put the shelves up to hang the shelves, and I realized that I did not get screws that were long enough to reach the studs, which I didn't even know was a thing because I have no idea what I'm doing, and I just walked down an aisle in Home Depot and picked up the first box of screws I could find, because literally what do I know? And turns out they were little tiny baby screws, which I felt very sensitive to their problems because I'm 5'2 myself, and it's rough to be so little, frankly. I'm such a tiny person, and, you know, it's hard. So I felt bad for the screws. I kept them. I'm gonna find another place for them. I sound like such a crazy person, but it's quarantine and we're all doing what we can to survive. I live alone. I've been talking to my dogs, I've been talking to my plants, and apparently now I am personifying screws. But anyway, I went on Amazon and I ordered longer screws. And I also ordered these things my friend Lizzie told me to get. What are they called? The, like, drywall things? The, like, white things that, like, you put the screw in and it, like, supports it in the drywall. I don't know what I'm talking about, honestly, and I didn't end up using them, but it was a good thought, and thanks for the tip, Lizzie. But I attempted to hang it with those, and that didn't work out well, but I did get longer screws, and I was able to hang the first one, and I tried to hang the second one, and it was so hard, because I guess it was really hard to get them into the studs. I was pushing with all of my might, but again, I'm such a little person, and it was really tricky, and I gave up and I called my dad because, you know, what else? And he drove all the way over to my apartment, and I think it's like a 40-45 minute drive. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I'm guessing accurately, which is an embarrassing drive to ask somebody to make to help you hang a shelf that you have failed at. But that's what he did. It's so nice. And he also came out, you know, to help me look at my car. I'm having some car trouble right now, but we're not going to talk about it. You know why? I have decided to put it on the back burner. It's not a right now problem. That's what I decided. I'm in quarantine. I'm working from home. I can order groceries. I can order anything from Amazon that I need. Like, I'm not going anywhere or anything anytime soon. And if I have to go somewhere, I can get an Uber. It's 2020. Like, it's not the end of the world that my car isn't working right now. And I needed to focus on the podcast. And my new dog has been driving me crazy. And I was like, it's not the time for car troubles. It's in the garage. It's home. I don't have to think about it. I'm just pretending it's not happening right now. So show. But he and I did that, hung the shelf, and it was great. And that was actually yesterday. So today, just so you guys know, today is Tuesday, August 11th. So yeah, you heard that correctly. The podcast is launching tomorrow and I'm just now recording this. I will say, I want to try and record these first segments as close to release day as possible. So, you know, I'm going to have a new episode posted every Wednesday. I always hate listening to podcasts. It's like December when it's out and you're listening and they're talking about like Memorial Day and you're like, when the hell did you record this episode and why was it so long ago? That just really annoys me. So I want it to be somewhat relatable to actually what's happening in the world. The second part where we're going to be diving into different topics and stuff, obviously I'll need to pre-record a bunch of those and that's what I've been doing, but this is fresh. More honestly though, I did scrap the entirety of episode 2 that I had recorded just this morning and I have been frantically working to re-record it because I just wasn't happy with it. And one of these days I'm going to stop being a perfectionist because I'm just gonna run out of time to perfect things. I've been texting my friend, kind of freaking out to her about it. And I was like, you know what though? At the end of the day, this episode is gonna be what it's gonna be because I told people it was gonna go up on the 12th and it's going up on the 12th. So whatever it is, we're gonna leap with it and that's what's happening. So that's just a very transparent look inside my brain. It's a very fun place. So congratulations to me. But you know, that's been my week. It is Shark Week this week, which means absolutely nothing to me, but my niece, Amy, loves sharks. I have two nieces, my sister and brother-in-law, they're beautiful children, Natalie, who, by the way, her middle name is Faith. She was named after me. She is 8 years old, and then her younger sister, Amy, is 6, and Amy loves sharks, and she's brilliant. They both are. And so she knows everything about sharks. I'm not joking. And so I'm in this group on Facebook. I have a friend who sells Color Street. It's like a nail thing. Anyway, we'll talk about it another time because it's actually very cool, but that's not the part of the story. But she was doing a giveaway, and part of the giveaway she's doing is there like are trivia questions every day that she's posting that you answer about sharks or whatever, because it's Shark Week and that's cute and fun. And I've been calling Amy every day. I called her yesterday and I called her this morning. First of all, she loves getting phone calls. Like, she's 6 years old. So like, how exciting. She is so psyched about answering these questions and she knows them. This morning's question was, which kind of shark can live out of seawater or can live in freshwater or something like that? And she was like, oh, it's a bull shark. Duh. It's just so crazy. This girl's 6 years old. Like, I just don't understand. But anyway, she's having the time of her life and totally thriving. And oh, to be 6 years old. What a fun time. So I don't want to take up too much time today. I definitely am excited to get to MKUltra and pick up where we left off. If you haven't already listened to episode 1, stop right now and go back and listen because we really did lay a good foundation and we're not gonna go over that again. We're just gonna kind of move on full steam ahead here. So this week is gonna be a little different from last week. I don't think it really makes sense to go through the rest of this story chronologically because the experiments that we know about, that we have documentation about, that I'm going to talk about all happened at the same time or overlapping one another. And then there are some experiments that we don't actually know what the dates were or how long it went on or when it started or when it ended, because again, we have very limited documentation, which we will talk about why that is. So I think this is going to be a little bit more relaxed, a little more conversational. I just am going to tell you stories. I'm just going to tell you little short stories about these different experiments that were taking place. And then we'll kind of go back into, you know, research essay kind of mode, and I'll tell you about the sort of collapse of MKUltra and how that came to be and what that looked like. But it's going to be just a lot of crazy short stories about these experiments and you know, how they took place. So I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to go hug my dogs and get some more water and that good stuff, stretch my legs a little bit. Have I mentioned that I'm podcasting in a closet and it's very small and I am very cramped, but it's, you know, kind of soundproof in here. I feel like this is the best for the audio. I feel like this is the best, what is that called? Anyway, so it's very hot and stuffy in here, to say the least, and I'm gonna go walk around, take a break, stretch my legs, and I'll be right back, and we'll jump right back into MKUltra. All right, guys, and we are back. So, as I said, gonna be a little more relaxed this week. I'm just gonna tell you stories about these different experiments. I'm gonna tell you what I know, and then we're gonna chat a little bit about them. I have some thoughts and opinions and commentary, and then we'll talk about the end of MKUltra and what that looked like. So, jumping right in here, let's talk about a man named Dr. Ewan Cameron. Dr. Ewan Cameron actually was a psychiatrist who became a part of the U.S. team that went over to Nuremberg in Germany and interrogated the Nazi doctors during the infamous doctor's trial and the creation of the Nuremberg Code. They wanted psychiatrists and other medical doctors to interrogate these specialists in Germany and see, you know, get the real lowdown on what they were up to. So Dr. Cameron was inspired by the Nazis. Can't relate to that. Don't know what that feels like, but he was really excited to see some of the research they were doing, and he went home and immediately set to work on mirroring that at his place of work. He at the time was in Mount Royal in Montreal at a place named Ravenscrag, which I don't even know if I'm saying that correctly. Ravenscrag? I think I am. It housed the Allen Memorial Institute of Psychiatry of the McGill University. So this institute he was the director of at the time. So I should note that he was already doing experiments on brainwashing and hypnosis and things like that in an effort to quote-unquote cure his patients. He wanted to erase their old defective personalities and replace them with brand new perfectly crafted personalities. That is what his life's work was devoted to, which sounds like something. And so he, again, was super psyched about the Nazis, was like, these guys really know what they're doing. And he came home and he really ramped up all of his experimentation. And then eventually, once MKUltra was created officially, they immediately contracted him and started funding that research so that he could do more work and hire more people. And just, you know, they really believed in what he was doing, and they believed that they could use it for, you know, purposes to help in the Cold War. So what he was doing was depatterning, and then something that he called psychic driving. So, with all of his patients at the Allen Memorial Institute of Psychiatry, he was utilizing electroshock therapy. That was the depatterning that he was doing. So he was having them go through these intense rounds of electroshock therapy. He used what was called the Page-Russell technique of shock therapy. Basically, it was just amplified 6 times. So instead of a shock, they got 6. And between their sessions, they were in medically induced comas. So what they were attempting to do was completely erase all of their past memories and thoughts and personality entirely. So they didn't want them to be still making memories, still creating memories. So they had them wake up, go through electroshock therapy, and then they would force them back to sleep sometimes for 30 days at a time. There was actually one patient that he kept asleep for 65 days. So it was just forcibly wake up, electroshock therapy, forced into a coma, and just repeat process. And after the depatterning part of the process was finished, he worked on psychic driving, which was basically just playing over and over and over again tape recordings that either he created or that he made the patient create in their own voice. That was just, I mean, things like, you're a good mother, you are an obedient citizen, you are a good daughter or son, just over and over and over again, to just basically create a new personality that they would then take on and just become a good mother and a good citizen and, you know, all of those things. So that was the process, and that is what so many of his patients endured. It happened for a long time, and eventually there were 9 people in total that sued the CIA for those experiments that were done at McGill by Dr. Cameron. The CIA did settle out of court for all 9 of these, so we don't have any details specifically about what that looked like. But, you know, settling out of court, that's how it goes. So I wanted to start us off lightly. I know that doesn't sound light, but we're getting into some stuff here. So this next one is probably going to hit the closest to home right now. So I want to issue a little bit of a trigger warning. These are obviously really tense times when it comes to the racial injustice that's happening in our country and this impassioned fight to end systemic racism is upon us. So this study is... I want to share it because it specifically is a wonderful example. I mean, it's tragic, but it is a perfect example, I should say, of the racism that is ingrained not only in our society, but very specifically in medicine. You know, there are still some doctors that when surveyed believe that Black people feel less pain than other people. So I do want to talk about this, and I do think it's very important. And again, it is a really good example of what's happening. But I just wanted to let you know, it's sensitive time. So I wanted to throw that warning out there that this is racially sensitive. So from 1932 until 1972, they had 400 Black men that were positive for syphilis that they observed over the course of 40 years and denied all medical treatment to. So they were using them as guinea pigs. They were like, we want to see what this disease does when it goes untreated. And the only way to do that is to watch somebody not be treated. So they took 400 Black men, only Black men, okay, and they refused treatment for their syphilis. And in those 40 years, they allowed these men to procreate. So there were plenty of babies born with congenital syphilis as a result of this because they weren't allowing treatment to these men. And it was honestly, it's such a tragic thing. And they just watched them over the course of 40 years. And you know, when people would get sick and when people would die, it was all documented. And they were just lab rats, honestly. And in year 25, this is the part that made me most upset reading this. At the 25 year mark, the Surgeon General of the United States signed certificates for all of them and decided to start giving them $25 per year for every year left in the study. So they were like, it's okay that we're doing this. Everything's totally above board and we're cool with it, but we will start paying them because, you know, that's the right thing to do. It's all so inhumane. So these 400 men went without treatment. A lot of them died. And eventually, you know, family members of these 400 men have been in the legal process. They obviously sued these doctors that headed up this study. And they were technically awarded $10 million when they sued. But still to this day, they are in talks and finalizing that. So nobody has gotten a single dime. And the final survivor of that study died in 2004. So, you know, of course, nobody is left with us from that study. And it really is, I mean, we're talking Nazi death camp level violations of human rights to not allow someone to seek medical attention for this just for the purpose of studying them. And you know, very soon into that experiment, penicillin did become available as a new, very viable option for curing and treating syphilis. But again, they weren't allowed any access to penicillin or anything else. So just horrific, awful things. And again, I must say, like, I know I went on a little rant, I think in the last episode, but I will rant again. This is how our government treats marginalized communities. This right here is how our government treats marginalized communities. And it always has been. And people who are trying to argue whether or not this is happening, this is happening. This has always been happening. I can send you the research on this study. Like, why? They didn't choose white men. They didn't choose anyone else. This is how our government has always treated marginalized communities. And I just can't say that enough. I will scream it from the rooftops. It's important that you know it. I'm not anti-American. I don't hate America, but I'm never going to stop making that clear because it's real and it's important and it matters. And racism is not gone. It didn't die when Abraham Lincoln became president. And we need to be talking about this. I never want to stop talking about this because it's important to talk about it. Now I'm going to crawl back down off my soapbox and quiet my voice and make it a little more friendly, and we're gonna hop right back in. So, moving along to one of my personal favorites that was deeply sarcastic, the Ames Leaf Room experiment. I'm just going to let that sit in for a moment. This experiment has a name, and it is creepy. It is the Ames Leaf Room experiment. And it was called that because it was named after the doctor that designed it. He was on contract to the Office of Naval Research, who was contracting out on behalf of MKUltra. It is essentially a large box that is covered floor, walls, ceiling, all in leaves, like vines and leaves, top to bottom, all around you, with the fourth wall missing so that people can sit and observe. So people were captured, literally just snatched off the streets, kidnapped. We talked about that in episode one, I know we did, we talked about the homeless people, drug addicts, and sex workers that were kind of the first on the list of people that they were going to use. So essentially what happened, how this originally came to light, a woman went missing for a few days. She came back to, you know, her people, her home, and was complaining that she had been kidnapped by the CIA and that they drugged her and they made her sit in a box of leaves and they forced her to do LSD. And of course, their plan worked because nobody listened to her, really. Some media reported it, but really nothing came of it. Well, it was all true, and this is what she's talking about. Essentially, in this room, there was nothing but leaves, and then in the middle of the room, a chair with two knobs on either side, a knob on either side, and a big white bar that was hanging from strings from the ceiling. Okay, so they were given these goggles that distorted their vision and made them unable to see angles correctly. And they, of course, made them take LSD. They slipped them LSD so that they were tripping. They were in a room of leaves. They were kidnapped. And their goal that they were trying to make them do was to make the white bar look perfectly horizontal to them so that the doctors could observe what it actually looked like in reality when it looked correct to them, which I don't quite understand still, even after reading all about this, what the point of that is, but that is the experiment that they were trying to do. So they captured people. Sidney Gottlieb, our good old friend Sidney Gottlieb, was there, and he was the one, she this is what I was saying about the peg leg. Can you imagine, guys, being given drugs without your knowledge, tripping, and you have no idea why you're tripping, and you didn't, like, you don't, do you even know you're tripping? I'm not sure, when you had no idea that you took drugs, and all of a sudden, you're hallucinating, and you're in this crazy room of leaves, and then this man on a peg leg walks in, and you're like, is this man even really here? Did I make him up? What's going on? Just horrific. Horrific stuff. So, but that was when they were very much focused on LSD. They thought LSD was going to be their bread and butter. They thought it was going to be the end-all be-all. They very quickly found out that wasn't the case, but originally, this was one of the first experiments where they started using non-volunteers, and they started picking people up without their consent. On that note, let's keep moving here. So the next experiment we're going to talk about, they took incarcerated sex offenders, who are not people that I'm super excited about defending ever. But, you know, again, everybody deserves human rights, and they should never be taken away. And I do believe that. So I'm not in the business of standing up for known sex offenders, but everybody deserves to be treated like a human being, and these people, again, were not, so we're talking about it. So, formal military psychiatrists that were now being contracted by MKUltra, by the CIA, essentially gave these men, these incarcerated sex offenders, LSD and different barbiturates, and interviewed them to try and get them to confess to sex crimes that they had never been charged with and didn't actually do. And they were trying to prove that you can use these techniques on an enemy agent or some person of interest and get them to confess to things they didn't do. Now, it should be said that this was not an original idea by the CIA or even by the US. This is something that absolutely happened during World War II to our own men. There were POWs, prisoners of war, that had been captured during World War II and that were being videotaped and recorded confessing to all of these war crimes that they absolutely did not take part in, and these crazy military plans that didn't exist. And, you know, it was an attempt by the other side to discredit the U.S., right? And to make the American people fear, you know, the U.S. government. So they were trying to get the world to believe that all of these awful things were happening by coercing these POWs into admitting that they were doing things that they weren't doing. So the CIA was like, that sounds like a great idea. Let's try to get that going on our side. And this is an experiment in which they tried to force people that were already in prison, already serving sentences for sex crimes, to admit to even more heinous sex crimes that they did not commit, to see if it was possible using LSD to make that happen. Moving on to a man by the name of George White. He was an OSS captain who formerly was with the Narcotics Bureau. He set up what he called safe houses for the CIA in New York and in San Francisco. He had these apartments or hotel rooms that he had dedicated to these experiments. They created one-way mirrors behind which scientists could observe their subjects. And then he went and hired local prostitutes to go to bars and pick up guys, drug them in the hotel rooms, and then engage in sexual acts with them while scientists filmed and observed behind the one-way mirror to study the effects of an unwitting dose of LSD under conditions that mimic the field interrogation. So the prostitutes were very much also subjects in this experiment. They wanted to see if they could condition people with the use of LSD to work on their behalf, which, you know, obviously to at least to a certain extent, they were successful in doing that. Now, I want to stop here and make sure that we call out the fact that these were random sex workers. They're called prostitutes in the article that I read, but it should be noted that on this podcast, we're going to call them sex workers because that is the term that they prefer. That is more respectful. They don't, I guess, prostitute is a more derogatory term, so we are going to call them sex workers. These sex workers were being picked up, hired, given some amount of money, made to do these things, dropped off, and the idea was they didn't have to care about what happened to them because no one was going to believe them if they talked. And these men that went with the prostitutes that were intending to engage in sexual acts with them, they banked on them being too ashamed to come forward and talk about it, and for the most part they were right. And this experiment went on over the course of years. They did this same experiment in these two cities, you know, for years with several different subjects, with many different subjects. And you know, again, it didn't come to light at the time because who believes sex workers? Who believes homeless people? Who believes mental patients or criminals? Who believes those people? So this next part we're going to talk about is hands down, in my opinion, the craziest thing that I read in my research on MKUltra. I'm going to give you as much detail as I possibly can. I was engrossed in this one story for like 3 straight days. I honestly, it's all I could think about. It's fascinating, but also terrifying. And it wasn't until 2009 that this was brought to light, brought to public knowledge, and actually proven. It's a really crazy story that actually is a lot more current than the rest. So on August 16th, 1951, over 300 people in a small village in France called Pont-Saint-Esprit. Yeah, I think I said that correctly. They were mysteriously drugged. Authorities evaluated possible connections. They were able to connect all of the poisonings to this one bread delivery to a bakery called the Briand Bakery. So very quickly, they were able to narrow down and say, okay, all these 300 people ate this bread from this specific delivery on this day from this bakery. Many people fell ill and were hallucinating. And at first, they were thought to have gone mad, but obviously very quickly, they learned that they had been poisoned. There was a man on this incredible documentary that I watched that is, it's called CIA Covert Experiments. there is this man who says, quote, "I didn't sleep for 21 days. It was impossible to close my eyes, despite all sedatives and sleeping pills that the doctors gave me. When you don't sleep for over 21 days, your mind works overtime. My young daughter had terrible hallucinations, standing on her bed, seeing blood falling from the ceiling everywhere. She thought her hair was coming out of her mouth. She kept trying to pull them out, but failing." And the daughter was there, and she said she didn't remember any of it when the reporter asked. So a lot of stories like that. It was just a beautiful day in a French village, just like, you know, Beauty and the Beast. She's walking around singing with the bread and everyone gets poisoned, which is just mind-blowing. So originally they started trying, obviously, to work backwards and figure out what the source of this was and what happened. At first, they thought it was the baker, and he was arrested, and then they thought it was the miller, and he was arrested too, and they both sat in prison for months until that they were exonerated due to insufficient evidence. And then there was thought to be water poisoning, like high levels of mercury in the water that was made in the baking process, but evidence also disproved that theory. And you know, it ended up just being that they were like, well, these people got poisoned, and we don't know what happened, and it kind of just stayed there until in 2009, an American investigative journalist named Hank Alberelli, A-L-B-A-R-E-L-L-I, Alberelli, revealed a CIA document labeled regarding Point St. Esprit and F. Olson files, which we're going to talk about Frank Olson in just 1 minute. But that all came to light. He released those documents in an expose, and finally we knew what happened. It was the American government. It was the CIA. They were testing to see if they could mass poison people with LSD and what the effects of that would be. And I gotta say, for this happening in 2009, and I don't know, maybe I had my head in the sand that year. You guys tell me if you've heard of this, but man, did they do a good job burying this, because I didn't hear about this. And 2009, like, that wasn't very long ago. Anyway, really, really crazy. I want to really quickly go back and talk about Frank Olson, and then we'll kind of bring the two back together, because they are connected, and we'll start wrapping up here. But you know, circling back and talking more about Frank Olson. So Frank Olson was a part of the CIA in 1953. He actually was a peer of Sidney Gottlieb. He helped Sidney to start up MKUltra when it began. He was also very heavily involved with testing that was being done prior to MKUltra on LSD on willing participants. Once Frank Olson really started realizing the scope of what MKUltra was going to be and what Sidney Gottlieb was trying to make it and was creating it to be, he was reportedly very concerned. He fell into a severe depression. He was thought to be on the verge of being a whistleblower. So in 1953, Sidney Gottlieb invited him to a dinner party and laced his drink with LSD. So he tripped, nobody else did, and it really had very severe damaging effects on his psyche. His wife said that he came home that day and he looked like he was in a trance, and he just kept saying, "I messed up," and they were all laughing at me. They were all laughing at me. I messed up, over and over. And in the days after that, he was in this deep depression, walking around like a zombie. His wife said he just wasn't himself. And then within a week, so less than a week later, he went on assignment with a coworker. He was staying in a hotel, and he reportedly jumped out of his 10th story window and died that day. And this was in 1953. You know, again, it was said that he jumped out of the window, but there was also a recovered phone call that his coworker that was staying in that hotel room with him made moments after, almost immediately after he jumped, and the recovered audio said, "He's dead." And somebody responded and said, "That's too bad." Almost like confirmation, potentially. I know I said we were only going to be talking about facts, but I'll let you think about that, but he was going to be a whistleblower and then he died. But what a coincidence that would be is all I'm saying. So again, his family had no idea what happened all these years. And there is actually an incredible docuseries on Netflix called Wormwood. It is so well done. I cannot recommend it enough. You have to go watch it. It's all about Frank Olson and what really happened and the journalist Hank who revealed this. And it's a great deep dive into Frank Olson's family. His son is heavily involved in the documentary or in the docuseries and helped to tell the story, and just so, so great. Such great information. I can't recommend it enough. So there's a lot more to discuss there. I'm not going to get into it right now. I want to move on, but I can't recommend Wormwood enough on Netflix. Definitely check it out. So in 1973, amid a government-wide panic caused by Watergate, which we're definitely going to talk about at some point because I'm fascinated by Watergate. What a crazy time. But the CIA director at that time, his name was Richard Helms, he ordered for all MKUltra files to be destroyed and it reportedly for the project to be shut down. Again, that's a little bit of a gray area, but he definitely called for the destruction of all MKUltra related files and documents. So, pursuant to this order, most of the CIA documents regarding this project were destroyed, but a cache of about 20,000 documents did survive, and so we did have that. And in December of 1974, the CIA was investigated by the Rockefeller Commission that was put together when Watergate went down in order to keep an eye on our different intelligence-related agencies in the military. So in the summer of 1975, the committee revealed to the public for the very first time that the CIA had conducted these experiments on both unwitting and cognizant human subjects, which is obviously a sentence I pulled right out of an article, right out of Wikipedia, because I don't say things like cognizant human subjects. So that was really the end, and that's as much as we know. So again, the public didn't find out any of this was happening until it was reportedly all over in 1975. And since then, you know, like I said, so many conspiracy theories about it still continuing and more things that happened. But the reason that there's so much quote-unquote conspiracy around this is because all of the files were destroyed and we only have 20,000 documents, which is not many when we're talking about this decades-long project. So if what we're reading that was left over is so horrific, I can't imagine what happened that we'll never know about. And that is so, so terrifying. And it's the kind of thing that will make you think twice before you judge people that believe in these kinds of conspiracy theories, because at this point, after reading about this, you pull these same players, these same crazy people, Sidney Gottlieb and his whole crew, you tell me that they did almost anything in the world, and I think I'd believe it after reading about this stuff that they've done. I don't know what else that they wouldn't, like, what would these people say no to? What would these people find unethical, right? So it's just, it's really, it is something that I think it's important that we learn. I think it's important that we know this. And again, I don't want to sound anti-American because I'm not, but I am saying there is no such thing as good guy versus bad guy in this world. There just isn't. It's not reality. And for all of the wonderful things that are true about our country, this exists and is true also. And so many other things that I think it's important that we remember that. Like, for all the good things that we've done, there is a lot of work yet to do. And this idea of just blind patriotism, is something maybe let's rethink. Maybe let's pause before we just jump into thinking that, you know, the United States is, you know, Superman that goes around saving all the other poor, sad countries. It just isn't necessarily always like that. That's all I'm saying. Honestly, guys, I think that's time. I know this was a bit scattered in comparison to last week's lesson, or I guess I should say episode one, given that these are both coming out on the same day, but I really wanted this to be casual. I wanted to just have it be more of storytelling, because, again, this is all we know. This is all we know, and it's limited. We don't know========================                                                                ================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================рири================październ================================================================================październpaździernpaździernpaździernpaździernpaździernpaździernософ================================================październpaździernpaździernpaździernpaździernpaździern dates for all of these experiments necessarily. Like, there's only so much documentation that shows what happened because of Richard Helms and the ordered destruction of all of these documents. So there's not so much to go off of, but there is enough that I wanted to make sure we covered all of it. And I hope that you followed along. I hope I wasn't too convoluted. I hope this was somewhat fun, even though I know it's heavy. I can't wait for next week. I know the topic. I know you don't, but I know it. And I'm here to tell you it's going to be so fun and a lot more lighthearted and really, really something that I am super passionate about learning about and have had such a fun time researching. So stick around, come back next week. Every single Wednesday, there's going to be a new episode of Faith Finds Out. This is just the beginning. This is topic one. So we've got so much more to learn together. I can't wait. Please, again, email me, faithfindsoutpodcast@gmail.com. Send me ideas for subjects to cover in the future. Send me questions, thoughts, concerns, corrections, pictures of your pets, anything you want, and I'll do my best to respond. Do you see how cute it was that I said, do my best to respond? Like 1,000 people are gonna email me when really, like, my mom's gonna listen to this and, like, maybe no one else. But anyway, I'll do my best to respond. I'm gonna be so busy with the overwhelming reception of this podcast, but I'll do my best. And please do connect with me on Instagram at Faith Finds Out Podcast. Lots of great stuff there. I won't keep talking your ear off about it, but definitely make sure that you're connected there. And yeah, guys, I've had so much fun. So if you have too, make sure that you subscribe on whatever platform you're listening. Download these episodes. That really helps me out. Downloading, it makes the algorithm very happy, and as does rating 5 stars and leaving a comment. That really helps the podcast get in front of more people and hopefully get more people to listen. So that would really help me out. And yeah, you know, guys, this is obviously still a very new podcast, so it would really help me, and I would so appreciate it if you enjoyed what you heard today. Send it to your friend. Send this episode to your friend. Send them episode one, or they're going to be terribly confused and incredibly depressed. But send them episode one and tell them to listen and share this on your socials and really help me get this out here. I think it's going to be a really good time. I'm happy that you've joined me for the journey. I cannot wait to dive into our next topic, and I hope you guys have a really great week. I can't wait to hear from you and to meet you and for all of this to really be real and not just me talking into a microphone all alone on a secret project that nobody knows about. I cannot wait for that to be true. So I'll see you guys next week. Have an awesome time. Wear your masks, social distance, be anti-racist, make good choices, don't be a dick, and thank you so much for listening to Faith Finds Out. This is Faith Signs Out.